into the shadows. "Wait." I kept my light aimed at him. "Where are you going?" He lifted an eyebrow like it was obvious. "Home." "But you said you'd talk to me."
"I said you'd get answers."
He pulled the brim of his cowboy hat lower on his forehead, winked, then walked away whistling, apparently fine with walking in the dark. "Thanks a lot." My tone was loaded with resentment. But what could I do, wrestle him down and force him to explain? I could still hear him whistling long after he faded out of sight. That same song from earlier. I stumbled a few times, but finally made it back through the woods to my motorcycle, with no more answers than the last time I'd been here. I was shoving my helmet on when it hit me. Pain. I mean pain. It hijacked my gut. Worst stomach ache ever. It felt like that water well had turned to ice daggers in my belly. I'd never felt anything like it before. And my head was throbbing. Big surprise, the water was obviously unsanitary. What had I been thinking? I drove home with two goals in mind. Don't wreck and don't barf in the helmet. I almost pulled over several times but pushed through, desperate to get to my toilet bowl and flannel sheets. I clung tightly to the handlebars with every turn, considering possible diagnoses. The most probable, I'd just ingested a ravenous parasite that was feasting on the lining of my stomach, and giving birth to ice-cold larvae, at an astounding rate. Don't panic. I nearly clipped the mailbox as I careened into our driveway. At least the blue truck was gone. It was all I could do to pull my keys out of the ignition. Am I really that weak? I slid off my bike and accidentally dropped my keys on the damp pavement. By the time I grabbed them, I had a full-blown migraine, the shakes, and what felt like frozen claws trying to slice through my abdomen. I tried to throw up in the bushes, but nothing came out. I reached the front door, anxiety gripping me. The porch was spinning. How was I supposed to get my key into the lock? Finally, something went my way. I gave the knob a twist, and the door opened. I normally wouldn't ask my mom for help, but the feeling that death was breathing down my neck compelled me. I needed to know where she put the bottle of ibuprofen and that pink stomach relief stuff. "Mom?" My keys crashed onto the wood floor. I stumbled toward the sofa. "Mom!" I buckled and toppled onto my side, my head connecting painfully with the floor. "Are you here?" For all my effort, I couldn't project my voice beyond a whisper. I rubbed my forehead with one hand and covered my mouth with the other. The only light on was in the hallway. Wonderful. The one time I didn't want to be home alone. I heard the patter of Daisy's nails tapping the floor, but I was too disoriented to see where she was. "Help me, girl," I whispered. She panted in my ear. I lay there in the fetal position and dug my fingers into my sides. My face radiated heat, but my gut remained chilled. I would have called someone, but I had no clue where my cell was. I surrendered to the pain and let my eyes drift shut. I considered the real possibility that the water was contaminated and I might not survive drinking it. Had the old man intended to kill me? I had a sudden disturbing realization. If I died, it might look like a suicide. Fear gave way to exhaustion and a final crushing thought. I don't want to be number 13. Chapter 5. A blinding white light penetrated my closed eyelids. Maybe there is an afterlife. Then a tongue slurped the side of my face, drenching me with drool and reality. Daisy.
Back off, girl. I squinted and shielded my eyes from the sunlight. I was still on the living room floor. So, I had cheated death and would live to see another day. I could only be so grateful. The pain in my stomach was still there, throbbing so bad I wanted to cut my gut open so I could rip it out. It was like a glacier was buried in my midsection. At least my headache was gone, but my back was killing me. I missed my mattress. I sat up like an arthritic grandfather. My mouth was a desert. From the looks of things, my mom still wasn't home. Typical. I bent my knees and tried to get a feel for whether I could stand. I leaned on the sofa, then put my feet under me. That worked. The wall clock read 7:43 a.m. So much for first period. Oh no, Jess. I looked around for my phone and spotted it by the front door. I scrolled through a flood of text messages from her, then replied, "Sorry I didn't come get you today. Be at school soon." I tossed my phone on the kitchen counter. At least I could fix whatever I wanted for breakfast today. I was famished and dying of thirst. Maybe if I ate something hot, like oatmeal, it would melt the freeze in my belly. I microwaved some oatmeal and consumed it, but the ice remained. I thought maybe a steamy shower would do the trick. It didn't. I grabbed some clothes from my closet, then paused. My room was darker than it had been a half hour ago. The sunlight was fading as more storm clouds rolled in. Guess I should have seen that coming. I considered staying home. I had a stomach ache after all. But I needed to keep up my attendance if I wanted to exempt out of finals. I was dressed and out the door by 8:30 a.m. The sun had officially checked out, and the wind blew harder than usual. I had taken only a few steps down my driveway when I heard a terrible noise, like nails on a chalkboard. No, more like an army of razor blades attacking a jagged rock. I looked in the direction of the racket. Nothing there. I started to mount my bike, but then I realized that the revolting sound was behind me, closing in. I whirled around. A jogger entered my line of sight, but she didn't look right. At all. What is that? My body went numb as I tried to make sense of the ghastly scene. A slender, attractive brunette out for a morning jog, with what looked like 8-foot chains dragging behind her. The 4 bulky metal tails grated against the cement, drowning out the rhythm of her tennis shoes pounding the street. The chain links snaked, staggered, and slapped the pavement. The woman tilted her head from side to side, seemingly on beat with the song in her headphones. Is this some sort of joke? She ran past me, and I traced the chains with my eyes, up her legs and back, all the way to a chunky, tarnished shackle fastened snugly around her neck. The metal links were bound to the collar at the top of her spine, just under her ponytail. As if that wasn't freaky enough, 4 or 5 black cords about as thick as my thumb spewed from the back of her head. They jutted straight out several inches, then hung down to the small of her back, swaying from side to side, smacking the chains. That's jacked up. Did I say that out loud? I wasn't sure, but what I was seeing was more than bizarre. It was somehow evil. The jogger finally paced out of sight. It occurred to me to run to the edge of my driveway and look some more. But no way. I wanted her and her freakish metal trappings to get lost. The skin-crawling sound lingered, making my already soured belly churn even more. I needed a second to get my head on straight, so I went back inside. I normally wouldn't leave my backpack on the driveway. My laptop was in there, but I was so creeped out I walked off without it. I went to the kitchen, splashed warm water on my face, then sank back into the sofa. The ticking of the wall clock was grating. I kept mentally replaying the soundtrack of those grotesque chains. My mind worked through possible explanations for Freddy Krueger's girlfriend jogging by my house. She's training for a triathlon, and the weight of the chains and cords are helping her bulk up. No, she works as a clown, not a happy one who goes to birthday parties, but a horrifying one. A clown who leads haunted hotel tours. And she's about to go to work. Maybe she was on lockdown in a prison and somehow broke free, while wearing athletic gear and headphones. None of my theories added up. So I turned on the TV. It took a while, but I finally felt myself relax. I glanced at my cell, 9:06 a.m. I had just overreacted to the icy feeling in my abdomen. That's all. No need to keep a death grip on the throw pillow. Time to move on with my day. I locked the door and walked to my motorcycle, that threatened feeling pretty much gone. But seeing my jostled backpack plopped right where I'd left it made me uneasy all over again. I couldn't get the image of the jogger out of my mind. What was so scary about her? It had to be the way she looked. Enslaved. As if, without her knowing it, something had shackled and claimed her as its own. Something powerful and cruel. I normally was out of my driveway in 3 seconds flat, but not this time. My hand hovered over the brake. Maybe the Bloody Mary jogger was circling back. I glanced around and saw that someone, some kids probably, had spray-painted the word RAGE in large lowercase letters on the fence across the street. Losers. I made it to the stoplight at the end of my neighborhood without seeing any joggers. Should I tell Jess, or anyone, what I'd witnessed this morning? The light changed, and I pulled forward, glancing at the grocery store parking lot on my right. What the... My eyes locked on a well-dressed man at the gas pump. Were those chains draping behind him? Cords coming from his head? Please, no. My attention jumped to the girl 2 pumps down. She had them, too. I drifted into the curb on the grassy center median, and someone laid on his horn. I came to a stop, but my mind was reeling. "Get out of the road," a guy yelled. The woman in the passenger seat beside him opened her door and mouthed something at me. They each had a fat shackle around their neck. My bike was sideways in the middle of the lane, but I sat there, unwilling to move, terrified of taking my eyes off the metal monsters around me. A mechanic stared from outside the auto repair shop across the street, then waved his arms at me. When I didn't respond, he turned back toward the shop, pulling his chains along. The sound of metal scraping cement invaded my ears. This is not happening. It occurred to me to call 911, but the man who had honked at me had gotten out of his car and was now approaching. I managed to grip my bike's handlebars, fully convinced that if I didn't drive away, he'd kill me. I pulled back hard on the gas and took off. If I happened to plow over the mutated guy, oh well. I made an illegal U-turn and sped back in the direction of my house. I don't know if the light was green or not, but I blazed through the intersection into my neighborhood. It felt like a bad case of déjà vu. On steroids. I flung my bike into park and sprinted toward my house like I was being hunted. Was I? As I reached the porch, I happened to glance at the garage door. Whatever blood remained in my face drained out. The word suffer was painted on there, just like the graffiti on my neighbor's fence. How had I overlooked it? I raced upstairs and locked myself in the bathroom, collapsing to the floor, clutching the sides of the toilet. I tried to barf again and again, but I couldn't. I was panting like a dying dog, drooling on the toilet seat.
What just happened? How did those shackles...
Wait, do I have one?
I hadn't noticed anything unusual about my appearance when I'd showered this morning, but everything had changed since then. Humanity was now under attack, or I was officially psychotic.
I stood slowly, bracing myself against the wall. My legs were jello, my skin cold and tingly. Fear breathed down my neck. But I had to know. I swallowed hard, then inched my way around, eyes shut. I told myself I'd open them when I was facing the mirror above my sink. A few more steps. Then...
Chapter 6. I forced my eyelids open and studied my reflection. No demon dog collar. I exhaled, then turned and checked the back of my head. No freaky dreadlock cords either. Relief. I was still bothered by the sight of myself, though. It was like a stranger was looking back at me. I rushed to my room and crammed my face in my pillow. I was beyond delusional. I needed to be locked up, or at the very least, sedated. Did someone follow me? I peered out the blinds, then yanked them shut in full paranoia mode. The front door, did I lock it? I shot downstairs, checked the lock, then ran back up to my room and shoved my desk in front of my door. I burrowed under the covers and hid there. For hours. I drifted in and out of sleep, wrestling over what I had or hadn't seen. The more I thought about it, the more convinced I became that it was all in my mind, some sort of psychosomatic episode that only felt real. It's not easy to accept that you're crazy, that your formerly sound mind is now overrun with hallucinations just because you did something rash the night before. I was almost certain the well water had poisoned me, toxified my brain. My phone was outside, in a holster on my bike, and it would stay there forever as far as I was concerned. Leaving the house was no longer an option. My mom still hadn't come home. Eventually, I pulled the covers off and looked for the clock that sat on my bedside table. I'd knocked it to the floor. 2:08 p.m. I sat up and took a panoramic glance around my room. My stuff was the same, but I felt far removed, homesick, even though I was home. I tried convincing myself I'd been sleeping all day, and this morning's horrifying events were merely lingering images from a fever-induced nightmare. But I knew better. My desk was in front of my door. Irrefutable proof. It hit me that I was missing track practice. Then it occurred to me that I might have a life-sucking brain tumor. What if, instead of sitting barricaded in my room, I should have been rushing to the nearest emergency room, getting prepped for surgery? But I trembled at the thought of going anywhere. I was desperate to talk to someone. Jess, Lance, my mom. Anyone who knew me before I became delusional. I needed my phone, but could I grab it and get back inside without being mauled by steel-trapped zombies? I lifted one slat of my wooden blinds up half an inch. No one. I grabbed a sweatshirt and pulled the hood over my head, then dug in my junk drawer until I found sunglasses. My Louisville Slugger baseball bat in my hand, I drew a deep breath. Time to make my move. I took slow, calculated steps down the stairs. Daisy sat by the front door, wagging her straggly tail. No walk today, girl. No way. I clutched my bat in one hand and slowly turned the lock with my other. Visions of this morning's jogger overwhelmed me. I imagined her leading a charge against me, kicking the door down the instant I cracked it open. Followed by the disgruntled guy who'd honked at me
and a horde of other chained and corded monsters. I peered through the sheer curtain panel. The coast was clear. My hand hung motionless on the doorknob. I could hear my stampeding pulse. My stomach was sub-zero, but I had to act. I swung the door open and sprinted to my bike, avoiding looking at the malicious word painted on my garage door. In seconds, I had my phone and was back inside. I slammed and locked the door, then pressed my weight against it, fighting to catch my breath. Jess had texted me. "Where are you?" I swiped my phone, anxious to call her, then stopped. How do you tell your prom date you're seeing chains and cords everywhere, hanging off people? I hadn't talked to my best bro back in Boston in a month, and he was too far to help me. I called Lance, pacing in circles in my living room, while his cell rang. I got his voicemail. "Hey, Lance. You know I don't usually leave messages, but I just really need you to call me, like, the minute you get in the locker room. Something really, terrible happened to me today. I mean, I'm okay, I think, but no, I'm not okay. Just call me." I hung up and texted him. I wasn't sure about calling my mom. I couldn't remember the last time I'd gone to her for comfort. I only recalled babying her a million times, bringing her boxes of Kleenex after bad breakups, and putting damp washcloths on her forehead on hungover mornings. I collapsed back onto the sofa and called her anyway. "Hey, Owen." She sounded sober and upbeat. I instantly felt a little better. "Hey, Mom, where are you?" "I stayed at Teresa's house last night. I brought my laptop with me. Been editing papers all day. You remember Teresa, don't you?" "Yeah, right. She was at some guy's house." I didn't know whose, and I didn't care. "I'm sorry. I should have let you know I wasn't coming home." As usual, our roles were reversed. "I've had a really, really bad day, Mom."
"You have?"
I cherished the sound of concern in her voice.
"What happened?"
"I don't feel good. I'm kind of seeing things or something. Scary things."
"Oh."
There was a long pause.
"What do you mean?"
"People don't look right." I turned sideways on the sofa and dug my feet under a cushion. "It's hard to explain.
When are you coming home?"
"In about a half hour. Why don't I pick up some chicken?"
"No, please, just come straight home."
"Oh, okay. I can do that." My mom was so different when she wasn't drinking. She actually kind of felt like a mom. I counted down the minutes until she came home, but I wasn't sure what to tell her. If I spilled my guts, she'd be no help. She'd just head straight for her liquor stash. If I couldn't handle something, she sure couldn't. And drinking was her go-to crutch. That and pathetic men. I clung to the sofa and took comfort in the normal humans on TV, even on the shopping channel. Why didn't the people outside my house look normal? It just didn't add up. I sat there drowning in my own cognitive typhoon until finally I heard the garage door open. I turned and faced the kitchen, knowing she'd enter from there any second. I was desperate to see a familiar face. "I'm in the living room, Mom." I heard her fumbling through the mail. "Seriously?" She went traipsing down to the mailbox at the end of the driveway instead of coming straight in to check on me?
"You got a letter from Boston U."
"Great, Mom. Can you please come here?" Finally, I heard junk mail hit the recycle bin. But then... "No." I tried to deny the echo in my ears, metal skimming the tile floor, then the hardwood. I couldn't bring myself to look. I stared into my lap, hardly blinking.
How are you feeling?
I could see her silhouette in my peripheral vision, but I didn't dare lift my head. My phone dinged. It was Jess.
You okay? I'm worried. Call me.
My mother lowered herself into the lounge chair across from me. A nauseating quiver crept up my back.
What happened to you today?
She opened an envelope. I told you. I've been seeing really horrible things. I felt her staring at me, silently looking me over.
Are you on something?
I balled my fists and glared at her, no longer slumped over.
How dare she?
Good news, though. There was nothing weird about her appearance. I was still incensed, but more relaxed than I'd felt all day.
Mom, why would you even ask me that?
Well, you sounded strange on the phone. And you wouldn't be the first teenager to get high. I popped my knuckles, mostly because it drove her nuts, then crossed my arms. Getting plastered isn't my thing. She averted her eyes, guilty as charged. But she was never one to admit to her vices. She got preoccupied again, digging through that stupid envelope. That was fine with me. I was just relieved to see her looking normal. I studied her. She wore a flowing skirt with a loose-fitting silky blouse. A scarf encircled her neck.
Why had I thought I'd heard chains scraping across the floor? Maybe it had come from outside, or maybe I was a basket case.
My mom shifted her weight, removed her shoes, and tucked her legs up on top of the chair cushion.
Clank.
My adrenaline kicked in again.
So, are you sick?
She reached across her chest up to her shoulder and unwound her scarf, a layer at a time.
I just don't feel like...
It was like my lungs just quit working. My mother's scarf cascaded to the rug, and now I could see it. A shackle, hulking, rusty, squeezing Mom's throat. I must have looked like I was about to pass out.
What, Owen? You don't feel like what?
She paused, then leaned away from me.
You're scaring me.
Irony at its worst. I felt myself inhale.
I just don't know what else to tell you.
She sighed, then put one foot on the floor and bent forward in her chair, extending a hand. I shuddered back into the couch cushions. She pressed her eyebrows together.
Hand me the remote, Owen.
I should have known she wouldn't push me for more information. She was an expert at changing the subject. I guessed she just didn't care enough. I didn't have the remote. It was at the end of the coffee table beyond our reach.
I'll get it, I said.
Too late. She was on her feet. My jaw dropped as a wall of chains draped over the back of her chair, forming a metallic canopy. There were too many to count. She bent over and a dozen gnarled cords slid and dangled down her left shoulder. She stepped to grab the remote and the chains jerked from behind the chair, slamming to the floor. It was like a crate loaded with pots and pans was hurling down from the second story of our house, shattering at her feet. I sprang up and covered my ears, stumbling backward, afraid to be in the same room with her. She didn't notice, the noise or my reaction.
Owen, bring me a Diet Coke out of the fridge, and take some Aleve. That'll make your headache go away.
In the midst of my catastrophic mental breakdown, I had two oddly practical thoughts. One, I never said I had a headache. Two, as far as I knew, we were out of Diet Cokes. I took a few steps in the direction of the kitchen without turning my back on her.
Mom? What?
She flipped through the channels, totally unaware I was dying inside. Frustrated as I was with her, I hated the sight of that shackle encasing her throat.
Where had it come from? Was it really there?
Either I needed serious help or she did.
What, Owen? Out with it.
Never mind. I should have known better than to look to my mother for sympathy. She didn't have it in her. I opened the fridge, refusing to cry. Sure enough, no Diet Cokes. I slammed the door shut.
Why is this happening to me?
I grabbed a stack of bills by the microwave and launched them at the wall, then collapsed into a chair at the breakfast table and stared out the window, rocking back and forth like a lunatic. As if on cue, Jess's Mustang convertible pulled up. I darted out the door at the back of the kitchen and sprinted through the garage toward the driveway. I didn't care if some scary figure lurched at me. If I could just get to Jess, my world would flip right side up, at least for a moment. The door on the driver's side opened, and I ran faster. She reached out to me. I could smell her perfume. But then my legs jarred to a halt, refused to go any farther. I couldn't hug her, couldn't touch her. No way. I couldn't get near anyone with a shackle.
Chapter 7. It was impossible to sleep, or eat, or concentrate. All of mankind, including the people closest to me, had morphed into metal-clad aliens overnight. I didn't know if they were out to harm me or not, but I was terrified of them either way. It was 11 o'clock at night, 8 hours since I'd seriously offended my girlfriend, and she was still texting me every couple of minutes. Jess had never been shy about dropping four-letter words, but this was getting ridiculous. Don't get me wrong, I understood why she was upset. Right when I should have thrown my arms around her, I stared at her in horror, then ran like she was infected. But for all I knew, she was. I was still too frightened to try and reconcile with her. Lance had called, but I had ignored him too, in case he was shackled and chained like the rest of them. Why wasn't I? I sat next to Daisy in the squeaky bed I'd inherited with the house and tapped my head against the wall. For the first time ever, I let the thought tiptoe in. Maybe I should escape. For good. Just end it all. My mom had more than enough sleeping pills. No, that's wrong. I can't. I tried to focus on something else, like piecing together some answers. But the dark ideas kept coming. I could sit in my car in the closed garage with the engine on. Maybe I could borrow Lance's hunting rifle. I shook my head. What was wrong with me? And then I started to smell something. It was nasty, like rotten meat, and getting stronger. Daisy sat up and sniffed the air. What is that, girl? I checked my trash can. Just a few scraps of paper and an empty Nutella jar. I poked around in the closet and under my bed, but I didn't see anything. Oh well. It stank bad, but I had much bigger problems. I had to think, come up with a reasonable explanation for my circumstances, and more important, a way out, one that didn't involve a coffin. The weird thing was, I felt doomed, but it was everyone else who looked doomed. I powered up my laptop and searched for people wearing chains. All that came up was stuff about fashion trends, jewelry, and some blog about a supposedly hilarious picture someone took of a Walmart shopper. I didn't believe in extraterrestrial beings, but just in case, I clicked through a bunch of websites about alien invasions. None described anything like what I was seeing. I decided to search for seeing things that aren't there. That didn't help my anxiety one bit. From what I read, I was most likely suffering from schizoid personality disorder, a diagnosis that scared me so bad I slammed my laptop shut and buried every inch of my body under my covers.
It's a strange thing to hope that you have a brain tumor, but I'd take that over some incurable mental disorder. At least brain tumors are operable.
Sometimes.
I made up my unstable mind. When the sun came up, I'd check myself into the hospital, even if it meant having shock treatments or my skull sawed open. Sure, I could end up banished to some godforsaken insane asylum, but that was better than suffering in ignorance and denial. Probably. By 4:30 in the morning, though I didn't feel like eating, my frozen stomach was shrieking for food. I left the protection of my room, went to the kitchen, and forced down a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a sip of milk. The silence while I sat at the table drove me nuts, or more nuts. I was miserable. This degree of loneliness was foreign to me. It was like I was stranded alone in the middle of the ocean, yet my worst fear was that someone would find me. I thought stuff like this only happened in nightmares or movies, but here I was, trapped in a demented universe, a real-life zombie apocalypse undetected by everyone but me. I didn't know if it was real or imagined, and I couldn't decide which was worse. Slouched over in my chair, I clung to hope the best I could. Surely I'd find a solution. I was, after all, in the top 5% of my class, the go-to guy to score a clutch basket when the stakes couldn't get higher. I never claimed to be a Boy Scout, but if anybody could find his way out of a wilderness, I could. I pulled my shoulders back and sat up straight. I trust in logic. Reason always prevails. I'll figure this out. Despite my confident resolution, I was desperate to get back under my bedsheets. It was the only safe place on the planet, as far as I was concerned. I tiptoed up the stairs and down the hall, paranoid that I'd wake my mother, even though I usually couldn't wake her when I tried. Once I passed her bedroom, I let out a deep breath I hadn't even realized I'd been holding. I was relieved to be that much closer to my room, even if it did smell like something had died in there. But wait. My mom's door was open. I knew what I needed to do, but it took me a second to find the courage. I went back. Her nightlight cast dim golden hues, just enough for me to see her sprawled across her mattress in a drunken coma. I took a careful step forward, then another. As much as I hoped there'd be nothing, from a few feet away I could see chains flung in every direction, and the nauseating shackle. Time to face my fear. I stood at the foot of her bed and watched her sleep. She was on her back, but angled onto her right side, breathing through her open mouth. Her petite body was framed by the eerie metal mass. Cords were coiled like snakes through her disheveled hair. I leaned in. From this close, they appeared to be braided strands of a dark, leather-like material studded with tiny, sharp-looking specks. Chips of glass and ivory or bone, if I had to guess. The cords got thinner on the ends, like rat tails, and seemed as pliable as cable wires. Not that I was willing to touch one. I moved closer, bracing myself against the mattress, and zeroed in on a chain dangling a foot away from me. Freezing air assaulted my face. The links were more massive than I'd realized, at least 5 inches long, and as thick as my thumb. I exhaled, and a cloud formed around my chin. It was an out-of-body experience, watching my hand glide in slow motion toward the metal. Surely it wouldn't kill me to touch it, right? Finally, the tip of my finger made contact. The metal was frigid. I jerked away, but then pressed in again, trying to clutch the chain with my palm. I couldn't. My fingers didn't wrap all the way around, and I couldn't hold on anyway. Too icy. I blew warmth on my trembling hand, making more fog, then gathered the corner of a plush blanket and wrapped both hands in it. I reached a third time, then hesitated. The colliding metal might wake my mother. No. Only I would hear it. I grabbed the chain and pulled as hard as I could, but it was impossible to lift it even an inch. I let go and traced the winding links with my eyes, focusing harder when I spotted a bizarre apparatus attached to the bottom link, hanging off the side of the bed, a half-cylinder with a hinge in the middle, some sort of open cuff. It had dents and dings like it had been dragged all over creation behind my mother, and it appeared scorched inside, stained with black soot. Cold as it was, I ran my finger over the cuff, venturing to feel inside, then touching the outside. I felt something rough under my numb finger. I reached for Mom's cell on the nightstand and shined the light on the cuff. Couldn't be. I blinked and blinked, but they wouldn't go away. Words chiseled into the cuff in crooked, sloppy letters like a small child had scribbled them on there. Charles Allen Mabry. Who? My delusions were getting more far-fetched. This had to be coming from inside my head, even though I had no idea how I could have dreamed up anything like this. I counted 15 chains in all, each with a cuff suspended on the end. I stepped to the side to examine another, but was drawn instead to two straggly cords intertwined among the chaos spewing from the back of my mother's head. Just when I thought I'd studied them enough, I saw something toward the end of a cord, a grayish tattoo-looking mark etched into the black pigment. Angry. All lowercase. There was no question now. I'd totally lost it. I collapsed to the floor. I was in a fight against despair and losing. Then, no freaking way. I shined my mom's cell at the ceiling. Victim. Lowercase letters, black graffiti. The phone slipped to the floor and my mother tossed in her bed. That sent me scrambling out of her room, and I didn't stop until I was in my bed, hugging a pillow so tight I thought it might rip open. Just like my world. I needed help. Competent, extensive help from a mental health expert with strong meds. And maybe a straitjacket. I stayed curled in a ball for hours. You gonna make breakfast? Mom. At least some things hadn't changed. I wasn't sure if it was the depression, the chill in my stomach, my ailing mind, or my body physically shutting down that pinned me to my mattress, but I could barely move. I heard my mother's chains clanking down the hallway, getting closer. I was much better at creating cover stories than coming clean, but it was time to tell the uncensored truth. My mom wouldn't take it well, but at least I might be able to talk her into driving me to the ER. Although the thought of leaving the house terrified me, not to mention being confined in a car with a shackled driver. She burst into my room and looked at me without a hint of motherly affection. Get out of bed, son. I propped myself up on my elbows and cleared my throat. That took a lot of effort. At least the rancid smell in my room was gone. Mom, who is... Owen... She narrowed her eyes. You're so pale. Are you okay? No. What's the matter? She stepped forward, dragging her medal. I told you I'm seeing things, awful things that I shouldn't be seeing. Like? Chains. I pushed the sheets back and put both feet on the floor. Words, a name, all kinds of irrational things. I don't understand either, Mom, but it's happening. I was on my feet now, pacing. You need to calm down. You need to help me. I dug my fingers into my scalp. Thoughts swarmed in my head like agitated wasps. Who's Charles Allen Mabry? She flinched. Wait, Mom, do you... You actually know him?
I moved toward her. Is that a real person?
My whole life I'd known that my mom kept secrets from me. I could only hope she'd be honest now.
She faced the window, then snapped her head around toward me.
What are you trying to do? Dig up my past? Throw it in my face?
What? I've done the best I can, Owen. Mind your own business.
She started to storm off, but I grabbed her arm and made her face me. Her chains gathered at my ankles.
So you do know him?
She did nothing but breathe hard.
Mom, tell me, I have to know.
Her chin sank into her chest.
Mom!
It was a long time ago, she said. More like mumbled.
So Charles Mabry is real?
She pulled her arm away and looked up, her lips pressed together tight.
You were what, 4 years old? Give me a break.
She ran out of the room. I fell back onto my bed. I didn't think it was possible to become more confused. Eyes closed, I thought back, panning through memories as fast as I could. Charles Mabry. Then it hit me. Charlie, the shaggy-haired guy who reeked of cigarettes and beer. He'd hung around the house for a while, a few months maybe, when I was little. I remember he got mad and smashed some holes in the wall with my t-ball bat, but that's about all I could recall. I tried to come up with a reason, some sort of formula, that would explain how I saw that man's name etched on a cuff dangling from one of my mother's chains. I got nowhere. I'd been convinced I was hallucinating. But what now? The front door slammed, and I watched through blinds as my mother jerked her SUV into reverse. So much for having her drive me to the hospital. Oh well. I needed to rethink my plan anyway, go back to when everything started, and work my way forward. It didn't take long. It was obvious. All hell had broken out after I made the asinine decision to drink that well water offered by the bizarre man in the woods. I needed to know what was in that water. I had a new plan now, but I dreaded going through with it.
Chapter 8. I threw on a shirt and jeans and my American Eagle baseball cap and grabbed my mom's spray bottle of mace from her nightstand, just in case. Time to hop on my bike and drive to the woods behind Masonville High. Easier said than done. My new agoraphobia threw a major kink in my plan. I stood at the front door squeezing my keys, waiting for the fear to subside. It didn't. I leaned and stretched from side to side and rolled my neck in circles, trying to loosen up and get a grip. Then my cell phone rang, and I jumped, hurling my keys in the air. Calm down. I looked at my phone. Jess. I couldn't ignore her forever. Hello? I already wondered if answering was a mistake.
Wanna tell me what's going on?
That's the clean version.
I don't feel good.
Well, I'd like to be there for you, Owen, but you won't let me. Why did you run away from me yesterday? And why aren't you returning my texts?
I'm dealing with something. I drank some water in the woods, and everything's been messed up since.
What?
She sounded even more annoyed now. I took a deep breath. Here goes nothing.
Jess, I've been seeing things. I thought it was all in my head, but then something happened this morning with my mom, and now I'm not sure. Does that make sense?
No. Have you gone to the doctor?
Yeah.
So I lied. Like I was going to admit I'd done nothing but hide under my covers.
You sure this isn't about prom?
What?
I've heard from, like, all these people that you'd rather go with Cindy Rosenberg. Is that it? You're ignoring me 'cause you're too scared to tell me?
Seriously? Jess was still in high school world. I wanted to tell her how ridiculous she was being, but all I could come up with was, I barely know Cindy. Well, Stella said she heard you say you'd much rather go with her. Prom is in a month, Owen. I can't believe you'd pull this. Nothing about the prom scene was even remotely appealing at this point, but I promised over and over that I wanted to go with her, not Cindy. It didn't matter, though. Finally, I got tired of it. You know what, Jess? You're right. This is all a big scheme to dump you.
It is?
No! I pounded my fist against the door. Daisy tucked tail and ran. I'm not doing well, Jess. Can you please try to understand?
Oh, I understand fine.
She hung up on me. Wonderful. Was I wrong to expect a little compassion? Maybe the cords in her head were preventing her. I slid my phone into my pocket and refocused on finding the nerve to leave my house. I counted to three, then forced myself to walk, more like sprint, to my motorcycle. I actually liked that it was drizzling. Surely that would discourage metal-bound joggers from taking to the streets. I drove fast, refusing to look at drivers. But I couldn't shut out everything. My icy gut churned when I saw spiteful black-letter graffiti stains on several houses and on the side of a fast-food building. I passed Jess's neighborhood, which sank me further into loneliness. I missed her, the old her with her pretty, unshackled neck and nothing but soft hair hanging from her head. I made it down the dirt path and parked in the same wooded spot as before, then checked an incoming text. Jess again. I thought you cared. Have you lost your mind? There was no right way to answer that. I charged through the woods, feeling creeped out, but I made it to the clearing unharmed. The sound of the rampaging waters was just as noticeable as 2 days ago, only now it caused the hairs on the back of my neck to stiffen. I peered into the well. It was totally dry, the bucket sideways in the dirt. I wondered what would happen when I drew the bucket up, if it would inexplicably hold water like it had for the old man. Where was he? I looked around, nervous he'd sneak up behind me again. But I'd welcome the chance to ask him some questions. I had a long list of them. As I turned the handle, I battled the feeling that I was being watched, spied on by something predatory lurking in the woods. Maybe this was the strange sense Jess had been talking about. Or maybe my schizoid paranoia was flaring up. It wasn't easy to shine my cell light into the well and turn the handle at the same time, but I managed it. And there, before my disbelieving eyes, the bucket steadily filled with water. Out of nowhere. Water level rising with every turn of the crank. I didn't stand around and marvel. I just scooped water into the plastic bottle I'd brought. I let go of the crank. And by the time the bucket hit the dry well bottom, I was already hurrying across the clearing. The walk back to my bike was uneventful, apart from the unsettling compulsion to look over my shoulder every 2 seconds. I was nearing my neighborhood when I noticed two small boys running up a driveway, having a blast in their swim trunks in the afternoon drizzle. I stared at their bare backs. There was nothing. No chains, no cords. I slammed the brake. Had the poison finally passed through my system? A lady, I assume their mother, stepped onto the front porch holding beach towels. Ugh! I rammed a fist into my open palm. She was shackled. Confusion squeezed my brain like a tight-fitting helmet. The kids had no metal. Why? And how come that lady had two chains while my mother had more than a dozen? And what was up with those big cuffs at the ends? My aggravation level was near boiling. When I pulled up to a stop sign that had "die" painted on it, my frustration spiked. I drove way too fast the rest of the way home. Having a dad would have come in handy my whole life, but never as much as now. I wished I had a father to run to, Not a coach, not a friend's dad, my own dad. But he'd walked away when he found out my mom was pregnant, slammed the door and never looked back. My mom felt the need to throw that in my face whenever I'd ask about him. It would shut me up, like she wanted. What kind of man marries a woman, but makes her swear not to get pregnant? I flung myself on the sofa in front of the TV. Daisy flopped down at my feet. Everything in TV land looked fine. Whatever. I was determined to get that water sample to Ms. Barnett, my advisory teacher who taught chemistry. If I came up with a good enough excuse, I was sure she'd help me. The thought of going to school gave me chest pains and shortness of breath, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. Only sissy boys get scared. One of my mom's ex-boyfriends had taught me that. Come to think of it, I'm almost positive it was Charlie Mabry. There was a knock at the door. No need to ask who was there. No matter who it was, I didn't know them anymore. Oh, and it's me. Lance. It felt good to hear my friend's voice. I turned the lock and begged the universe to let me see him without anything around his neck. No such luck. He and his girlfriend, Megan, stood on my porch, both shackled and chained. Hey, dude, we've been worried about you. Are you all right? I gave him a blank stare. He returned the favor. Megan squeezed Lance's hand, looking like she'd rather be, well, anyplace else. You gonna let us in? I was afraid he'd ask me that. I opened the door and stepped away. Then came the stomach-churning sound of chains scraping the floor. Lance didn't hesitate to take charge. Megan, why don't you hang out here while we go upstairs and talk a minute? I didn't allow shackled people in my room, but okay. Megan gave him a sweet smile, then took a seat on the sofa. She really was cute, apart from her metal trappings, of course. Lance followed me up the stairs. It was all I could do not to cover my ears. I sifted through the events of the last 2 days at hyperspeed, trying to settle on how I'd break the news. I sat stiffly on the corner of my bed. Lance relaxed on the floor. "You skipped practice to come see me?" I said. "Coach said it was fine." Lance reached up and grabbed a sports magazine off my desk and thumbed through it. I mean, he wasn't happy yesterday when you missed practice, but when you were absent again today and no one had heard from you, I think he was more worried than mad. "Are you going to be okay for the meet tomorrow?" "About that. How do you run a race while dodging chains and swatting people's cords out of your face?" "I don't know. I'm really..." He closed the magazine. "Are you down or something?" He was probably worried I'd be number 13. His instincts weren't far off. "Yeah, I'm down, but it's not what you think. It's worse." "What do you mean?" He scooted closer. "Did your mom do something?" Since moving to Texas, I'd only told Jess about my mom's drinking. But Lance had sort of picked up on it after being at my house a few times. "No, I did something. Something really stupid."
"Okay."
I rubbed up and down on my face a second, then started spilling my guts. I told him every deranged detail, starting with how I'd drunk water from a well that had made me so sick I'd thought I might die. He asked me if I was feeling better now, so that's when, after I warned him not to freak out, I told him about the chains and the cords and the graffiti everywhere. Confessing made me feel lighter, like I was pulling myself out of quicksand. What a relief to have a friend like Lance. Too bad things tanked from there. Lance searched my face, a half smile on his. "Chains. Right." His disbelief hit me like a cannonball in the chest. "I know it's ridiculous, Lance, but please try to understand." He stood and crossed his arms while I fidgeted with my sheets. "You're not making any sense, Owen. I know, but I need you to believe me anyway. Help me get this. Who do you see wearing these chains and stuff?
Everyone.